So we're going to welcome in Will Dorman, and the Will's topic today is going to be web traffic observation with CERT Tapioca. Will Dorman has been a software vulnerability analyst with the CERT Coordination Center, or CERT-CC, since 2004. His focus areas include web browser technologies, ActiveX, and fuzzing. Will has discovered thousands of vulnerabilities using a variety of tools and techniques. And before I turn it over to Will, I just want to remind everybody that's logging in and out throughout the day, we have a files tab that's available on your console. You can download the presentation slides along with other CERT work in the area of cybersecurity that you can walk away with today. If you're only joining us for one or two presentations, you'll see a survey tab. We request that you fill that out as well, as your feedback is always greatly appreciated. So we have Will queued up. We're going to turn it over to Will. Will, welcome. All great. Yours.
Thanks, Shane. I just wanted to talk a little bit about a project that I've been working on and a tool that I've released called CERT Tapioca. And basically, this is an appliance that can be used to analyze web traffic. But before I get into the details about the tool itself, I just wanted to give a little bit of detail as to how I came across the need for this particular type of tool. So there was a year or so ago, I was looking into a particular technology. Basically, it's the concept of bundled software. And the way that I started looking into that is I was working with a virtual machine. I needed to download some software, and I just did a quick internet search for something. And it turned out it didn't actually get me to the site that had the software, but it was actually another site that was providing it for me. And I actually did a blog post talking about the risks of bundled software. In this particular case, I've got a screenshot of something from a site called download.com. There's a number of different sites that do that same sort of thing, but in this particular case, I started to look into, you know, what happens when you run this particular installer. But as I started digging into it, I noticed, you know, the first application that I was looking at was called KM Player. There happened to be another tool called Enable Disable Registry Tool. But what I noticed is as I had both of these files on my system, they had the same MD5. So the installers were absolutely identical. So when you run this installer, how does it actually know what to get from the internet? And if you look closely at the file name, there's actually a number as part of the file name itself. So what happens is when you run this installer, it uses that number as part of the file system, or as part of the file name, to retrieve and execute the installer from the internet. So I started to look into, well, how does it actually get the software from the internet? You want to obviously do that securely. And it turns out this particular application was using HTTP, which is not encrypted. It's completely clear. And if you look, you can see that exact same number that was part of the file name is part of the GET request. And then there's a particular section here called download link. And that's actually the download location for the actual application that I'm getting. So not only is this particular request in the clear in HTTP, but the download link itself is in HTTP. So I figured, well, I should be able to just man in the middle it. So I should be able to inject myself in between the application and just see, you know, would an attacker be able to subvert this particular application? And the common way of doing that is you just configure a system to use a proxy server. At that point, all of your traffic, rather than going directly to the internet, is going to go through this man-in-the-middle system. The problem I ran into is this particular installer, it's not aware of your proxy. So you can configure your Windows system to say, this is the proxy I want to use. But when I go ahead and try to use that installer on a system that only has access through that proxy, I see, well, you don't have access to the internet. So I was thinking, well, how can I dig into this a little bit deeper? I want something that doesn't operate with proxy settings, but I want something that happens on the network layer. So I really just used, I had a virtual machine that we had actually released as part of our fuzzing framework called BFF. There's a particular machine called UbuFuzz, which is really just a stripped down version of Ubuntu, no password or anything, because we just want it to be pretty simple. And we used an application called MITM Proxy. And the real magic of where this happens is IP tables is used to transparently redirect network traffic to this MITM proxy software. So what happens is when I run an application that's talking using web protocols, it's transparently being interpreted by this particular virtual machine. And basically, it's a virtual machine with two network adapters. One of them connects to the internet. The other one connects to the system that you want to analyze. So it's relatively straightforward, but just providing it in an appliance form helps. And we made this publicly available. You can download this particular appliance, and it's pretty much compatible with most of the virtualization products that you might use. So just a little bit of the detail about how MITM Proxy and subsequently the Tapioca virtual appliance works. It's important to look at what happens when you... Now, mostly this is interested. This is focusing on secure communication, so through SSL, and I'll get into a little bit of the details later on. But essentially what happens is you have a client, and that might be a phone, it might be a Windows system, Linux, it might be a smart light bulb. But basically what happens is when the client communicates with this proxy, the proxy makes a valid SSL handshake with the server. What also happens is the client makes its own SSL handshake with the MITM proxy. So it's kind of a two-stage sort of thing. If the client is not making sure that it's a valid SSL handshake, this particular component in the middle can see everything. So it's a very straightforward way of observing traffic of applications that are not validating SSL certificates. And the architecture of Tapioca, like I mentioned before, is it's a virtual appliance. You could actually make it into a physical machine if you had an application that needed that. But basically, you have the Tapioca machine that has two network connections. One of them is an uplink to the internet. And then the other side is something that is connected to something that you want to test. And whatever you want to test can be anything that talks TCP/IP. It's talking with web traffic. It could be a phone. It could be a virtual machine. In this particular case, you can have a virtual network. So it could be actually physical devices that I might have in my pocket, or this could be all virtual machines. And Tapioca is able to observe the traffic that happens between the client and the internet. And Tapioca really has two primary operating modes. I had mentioned the first one earlier. The other mode that you can use Tapioca is, the first mode that I mentioned earlier is, if I have a system where I don't have the certificate installed for the SSL traffic, and that's basically just by default, if I take my cell phone or my smartphone and I associate it with an access point that is uplinked to Tapioca. What that means is that any client system is going to receive an invalid SSL handshake. So what that means is you can look at the cert Tapioca traffic log, and if you ever see SSL or HTTPS traffic passing through Tapioca, that means that the client has ignored the validity of the certificate. And so what you can do is you can look for applications that are communicating insecurely on the internet. If you're not validating an SSL certificate, that means that you actually could be talking to something other than you expect. The other mode that you can operate Tapioca in is if you do install the certificate in the client system that you're analyzing, what that might allow you to do is, if there's a particular application that I want to look at, a particular, let's say there's one particular app that I think is interesting, and I want to know, when I just look at the network traffic of that particular system with Wireshark, for example, you don't actually see what is transmitting over the network. You see an SSL handshake, and then at that point, everything is encrypted. If I have an application that I'm interested to see, you know, is this actually perhaps sending sensitive information over the network? Is it sending or retrieving something that I don't want it to be sending? You can actually observe that traffic if you have the certificate installed. And that assumes that you have the ability to install a certificate through the platform that you're looking at. Certain Internet of Things type devices, like a smart light bulb, you might not be able to do that. But for the type of platforms that support certificate installation, you can look at that traffic.
So we're going to launch a quick polling question, folks, for you here. When you visit a site on the Internet, how do you know you are viewing an actual legitimate site? And since there's multiple answers to this, we ask that you just type your response into the Q&A window, and then we'll get back to Will with some of the responses as they flow in.
Absolutely. So it seems like a very straightforward question, but there are actually some idiosyncrasies to that. There are some aspects that might surprise you. So one of the first things that I used as an application of the Cert Tapioca appliance is I started to look at Android applications, and this is the first operating mode of Tapioca. I want to look at apps that are not validating SSL certificates. The first thing that I ended up doing is, you know, you start out with any sort of test that you're doing. You start out with the simplest sort of situation. And I happen to have an Android phone, and I just associated it with an access point that was connected to Tapioca. And you can try an app manually and see, is there any HTTPS traffic that is getting sent over the network? But obviously, that doesn't scale very well. There's over a million apps, a million free apps in the Google Play Store, and I got bored very quickly. But as we do with a lot of different things when you're analyzing things in bulk, is you look into ways that you can automate the technology. And there are a number of different components that we used. Google Play Crawler is a component used for obtaining apps from the Play Store. VMware, we started out using the Android SDK, which comes with an emulator or an Android virtual device. And then Monkey and Monkey Runner are both components that are associated with the SDK that allow you to automate an application. So if I'm firing up an Android application, I want to actually exercise as much of that code as I can. So basically, I'm emulating keystrokes and that sort of thing. So the nice thing about that is now I can test when I can sleep, I can go home from work, and it's still testing, and I come back, and there's more things waiting for me. So here's an actual video of the emulator. And as you can see, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but you can see it's actually typing things in to the Android application. And when you type things into a form or type things into the application, quite often, look, in this particular example, you've got a username, you've got a password, and I've got a button that says login. If my automation is working properly, it'll type in the username, it'll type in for something for the password, and ideally it presses that login button. So if at that point I see traffic that goes over the network over HTTPS, I know that I now have a vulnerable application. So this is actually the Tapioca side of things, and it kind of goes along with you seeing the Android application being automated. But basically what's happening, and this is accelerated because at the time that I took this video, it was through the emulator as opposed to a more fast virtualized version of Android. But basically what's happening is I'm seeing all of the web requests that are occurring. But in this particular case, I'm actually seeing HTTPS. So what that means is that this particular application has sent data insecurely over the network. So I can log this as a vulnerable application. So that was through the emulator. Because emulation is much slower than virtualization, because the emulator is emulating the ARM architecture, it turns out that you can actually get an x86 version of Android. And you can run that directly in your virtualization software. And the advantage to that is because I'm not emulating and I'm virtualizing it, you get a tremendous speed increase. So just by transitioning to the x86 architecture, we were able to get at least a tenfold increase in performance. And as you can see in this particular screenshot here, I've got 20 different Android virtual machines. So as I'm testing these applications, not only am I testing them more quickly for each particular application, but I'm doing it 20-fold at a time. And if we wanted to ramp it up a little bit higher, we probably could have used some sort of cloud technology to really do it at scale. So this is the architecture for the testing of Android x86. It's slightly different than using the emulator in that when you use the Android emulator, you can run the ADB command, which is the Android debugging bridge, and I can just say, tell this application to do this, and it happens automatically. With Android x86, because it's an actual live operating system, you don't have that automatic debug bridge. So really what you need is just a second network. So you can see on the left side, or in the middle of this particular screen, I've got the Android x86 virtual machine. That has two network adapters. One of them is just the orchestration, telling the Android virtual machine what to do. And then on the right side, I've got Cert Tapioca with a standard operation of one side goes to the internet, the other side goes to the application that I would like to test. And here's a particular screen of automation. It's really just it's a fixed screenshot at this point, but what's happening is basically there are different terminals that are sending commands to the different Android applications that are being tested. So this was actually a test that I had performed over the period of several months, really just downloading one application at a time. And you can see we got just past the point of 1 million application. We looked at free applications. Assuming that free applications are representative of the entire set of Android applications, it's simplest to download the free applications. In 2014, there was an article that mentioned that they now reach 1 million apps. So at the time that I started this particular test in 2014, I assume that we got probably most of the Android applications. So after testing just over 1 million Android applications, we were able to find close to 24,000 vulnerable applications. Some of these applications are very important. Some of them are banking applications. Some of them are credit card applications. These are things where I am now perhaps logging into my Google account or some sort of social media account. Now, some of them are not important at all. It could be that I have an app where it's really just a game and it retrieves an advertisement over HTTPS, but it does it insecurely. So it's really, you can't really lump the severity of all of these all into one, but just realize that there is an entire spectrum of importance in the apps that we're looking at. Most of the apps had email addresses where we could notify them. Some of them did not. So really, we were able to notify over 23,000 application developers. And this was an interesting case of automating the whole coordination aspect of vulnerabilities. And that is not only just finding the vulnerabilities, but actually notifying the vendor that needs to find out. The part where it gets a little bit depressing here near the end is, what sort of response did we get from the Android application authors? Well, out of the 23,000 emails that were sent out, we received about 1,500 responses. Now, a number of those are just automatic responses saying, hey, we got your email. Now, when you go to the actual count of people that responded saying, hey, we fixed this, thanks for letting us know, it's actually 0.1%. So about 25 authors out of approximately 24,000 notified. So it seems like the authors that are creating a lot of the Android tools. Now, that's not to say that only 25 authors fixed their software. It's 25 authors told us that they fixed it. So there could be, after some amount of time, a good number of authors fix their app, but we only know about the ones that actually told us. So going into the other aspect of, another application of using Tapioca. And that is, I started looking at the Android applications. And since we already had this appliance that was pre-made and you can just kind of plug it in, I started looking into a different application for it. And this is not specific apps that are running on a phone, but this is actually an entire technology called SSL inspecting proxies. So just a little bit of a background about HTTPS. Most people say SSL because the two terms are used a little bit interchangeably. Under the hood, HTTPS is a security protocol. It's basically HTTP, which is the web protocol, but the S gives it the security aspect. And under the hood, it uses either SSL or TLS. But I won't get into any of the real details. I just want to talk about the main capabilities that HTTPS provides. And that basically is authentication of the site that I visited. So when I visit my bank account, or if I visit my banking website, I want to know that that's actually the banking site and not some guy that's sitting at my local coffee shop.
Do we want to get into some other responses from the polling question earlier? Is now
we
a good
can,
time to
we
do
can
that?
Do that. No? That would be pretty good.
Okay, so we got a number of responses. The first one was HTTPS.
Okay.
Another one replied, sad to say, I don't know.
Yep.
Another one, I do not trust any response I receive from the internet.
Oh.
Another one, verify the URL is correct. Another one is WRT with regards to authentic website. I cheat. We use OpenDNS to screen websites before we allow clients to reach them. Another one, we usually just make sure that there are no errors when navigating to HTTPS sites, but you can look at the CA information for the cert and other details of the cert.
Oh, that's a good one.
I look at the IP address in the return. If it was intercepted at outset, I won't know. Good point.
Yeah.
Somebody says, I don't know. Another one, HTTPS known _URL. Another one, I check the URL and make sure that it's formatted appropriately for the site I'm trying to visit. I'll also frequently find the correct URL myself instead of a hot link for important sites.
That's a good idea. And, you know, not using a search engine result to click on a link, but actually typing it in. And actually, if you type in https://, that is it's a good start to be able to realize that you're on the right site that you think that you are. Because if I were actually just to type in the domain name of my bank or any particular site that I want to go to, I'm relying solely upon DNS, which could be under attacker control, and I might end up at some other particular site. It's a really tricky sort of situation, and the unfortunate aspect is out of all of the particular suggestions that I heard is none of them are actually going to guarantee that you're on the site that you think you are, and I'll get into some of the details as to why that is the case. So authentication of the site that's visited is one of the primary goals of HTTPS. The other thing is the privacy and integrity of the data. So if I'm on my banking site, and yes, I'm sure that it is the site that I think that I'm on, I want to make sure that anything that gets sent between my computer and the site that I'm connecting to, I want to make sure that nobody can observe that information. So if it's a social security number, if it's a login or password, I want to make sure that nobody can actually access that. So the general expectation that people have of HTTPS is that I have end-to-end security. I have my client system. It might be a Windows system, Linux. It might be a phone. But basically, I'm connecting to a server, and it's using HTTPS, which under the hood is either SSL or TLS. And I assume that I have end-to-end security between my computer or my system that I'm using in the server. That information is protected. In actuality, there's a little bit different security that it gives you. And those two slides look pretty similar, but the real difference here is this phrase point-to-point security. When I'm connecting to something using HTTPS, I actually do not get security between my client and the server all the way guaranteed. It's just to the next point. And I'll get into some of the details as to why that is important. So earlier this year, there was a particular event in the media called Superfish. And it happened to be a particular computer manufacturer bundled some software in. And some people labeled it as malware, adware. The terms are generally interchangeable at this point. And it was in the media in a lot of different cases. And Superfish was something that actually injected itself into your web traffic. And even if that traffic was encrypted. So, for example, if I use a popular search engine, quite often that traffic is using HTTPS, but somehow this particular software was able to inject ads or other media into that particular web session. Which makes you wonder, how can that occur? How is it that this software is able to modify things that should be protected with HTTPS? And if you look here, the client system on the left side, it might be your computer system, and you have your web browser, and Superfish is actually a proxy that is doing HTTPS interception. So if I look, I can see I have point-to-point security between my web browser and Superfish. And I have point-to-point security between Superfish and the server. Well, the problem is that the end-to-end security there is not guaranteed because there's something happening in between my system and the end server. And how does that able to work? So one of the comments that was brought up earlier is, how do you know that you're on the actual site that you think you're on? Well, web browsers will generally warn you. If there's a certificate problem, if it's provided with a certificate that's not what it's expecting, it'll tell you, hey, something is wrong here. Well, it turns out Superfish installed on your system, it installs something that's known as a trusted root certificate authority. So if I look here, this is a Windows system, and I can see there is a certificate that identifies itself as Superfish Incorporated. So what that now means is, because this is in the trusted root certification authority section of your system, that now means that this system will trust anything that is signed by the Superfish certificate. We'll get into that in a little bit here. And it's not just Superfish. There were other applications. There was one that I looked at called PrivDog, which did just about the same sort of thing. But that got me thinking, well, okay, we've got Superfish, we've got PrivDog. What else? Maybe there are other things that are doing this sort of interception of SSL. And it turns out there's an entire enterprise-grade class of product called an SSL inspecting proxy. If I am a network administrator of an enterprise network, I might want to see what's actually happening over HTTPS, whether that be Facebook, it could be malware, it could be, there's a large number of reasons why somebody might want to look into SSL traffic. So I just started to look, and this is all part of a blog post called the Risks of SSL Inspection. You can get a little bit more detail about this. But I looked for products that had evidence that they did SSL inspection, and I came up with about 60 different products. I'm sure there are a lot more, but these are a lot of big company names in here. And so when you're looking at SSL inspection software, and this might be an appliance, it might be an application that I'm running on a server, it's very similar to Superfish in that it's basically injecting itself into the traffic. I can see on the client system on the left, I make an SSL or a TLS connection to this particular appliance. On the other side of that appliance, I don't really know what's there. I don't get any visibility into what's happening on the other side. I assume it's doing the right thing. But it might not. I mean, if they're not doing everything perfectly, it's going to put the clients at significant risk. Even if they did everything properly, it still introduces some amount of risk to the client system because you're not actually talking to the server that you think you're talking to. So I was able to look at some of these particular appliances by just taking my Cert Tapioca appliance and putting it on the far side of that particular application that I was looking at. So basically, I was injecting Tapioca. So really, in this particular diagram, there are two SSL inspections happening. But what that allows me to do is I can see, does the appliance that I'm looking at that I might have deployed in my network, is it doing the right thing? If Tapioca is providing it an invalid certificate, is it relaying that back to the client, or is it preventing the client from making that communication? So as I'm looking at these particular appliances, I noticed a series of mistakes that these appliances are making. And these are appliances and applications. There's a whole spectrum. And these are not mistakes that I theoretically came up with and decided, well, this is something that somebody could potentially do. These are all real-world mistakes that I have seen in software that is being that is currently deployed on the internet. One of the things is, it's a very generic term, but it's incomplete validation of upstream certificate validity. It could be that it doesn't check it at all. If it doesn't check it and it just allows the client to proceed, then that puts the client at risk. Sometimes there are some details where it does some amount of validation, but it's not doing it as thoroughly as it should. The other aspect that I mentioned earlier is, if it is doing validation, is it relaying the results of that validation back to the client? If it's doing validation, but it doesn't relay the status of that validation back to the client, it might as well not be doing the validation at all. This was the overloading of the canonical name field. The CN field is a field in a certificate that's used for SSL traffic. We've seen some cases where an SSL inspection application is simply changing the CN field, such as verify fail.google.com, for example. What they're doing is they're changing the domain name, and if the domain name of a certificate doesn't match the domain name of the site that I'm visiting, the browser says, hey, something is wrong here. It might not actually represent what the actual problem is, but it's at least telling the client, hey, something is not quite working right. We've seen some applications that are using the application layer to convey certificate validity. And what that basically means is if I'm using a web browser, this particular SSL inspection device might give me web content that says, in HTML, it says, hey, something is wrong with the certificate. Maybe it'll give me the ability to proceed or not. The problem with that is that not everything that talks using web protocols is a human being sitting in front of a web browser. If I've got a client that's making a web request, if it gives me something in the application layer, who knows what the responses might be. This is one that threw me off a little bit, but some applications are only doing validity checking based on the user agent that is provided by the client. And I was looking at a particular product, and my first conclusion is this application is not checking validity at all. It was a fully patched system using IE11, and it just didn't validate anything. And I figured, well, okay, this is the case number one. Only upon further investigation did I realize that if I used an older version of Internet Explorer, it did check the validity. So really, it had a fixed list of here are the clients that I want to inspect the validity of the certificate for, where obviously that's a problem. And then the other case that we've got here is communication before warning. I've seen some cases where it will warn the client, but it's only after it sent a GET request to the server, or a POST if you're really lucky. But the thing is, that GET request is going to have your session cookie. And if it sends the GET request before it checks this, before it enforces the validity, I've now enabled an attacker to potentially steal my session. And then the last case that I've got is some of these applications, they use the same root certificate authority certificate across all installations. So if I have an appliance that does SSL inspection and somebody else has that same appliance, if they use the same certificate, that means that an attacker can say, okay, well, I can just now use this certificate and I can now intercept traffic for any particular client that has this software.
Okay, so another polling question to help us drive the flow of the next part of the presentation. Will wants to know, what type of SSL validation mistakes would you like more details about?
Yeah, so I realized that that list was kind of a quick sort of run through to determine, or to just kind of outline the different mistakes that are made. But if anybody has the interest in getting more details about any particular one of those, I can easily follow up and kind of outline some of the details about that.
Okay, and I'll give you a quick results here so far. We got 2 at 25% will. Same root CA certificate and use of application layer to convey certificate validity. So.
Sure. And I think I can actually go into some, since we've got some answers already, I could probably go into some of the details.
Please do.
The two are relatively straightforward, but it's interesting to see some of the details. So one of the cases, one of the mistakes that are made is that any application that is doing SSL inspection, it is important that that application generates the root CA certificate that it is going to use at the time of installation. The reason for that is, if I have a particular installation of an SSL inspecting proxy, I want to make sure that I already realize that I have this, you know, if I am an enterprise network administrator and I've deployed SSL inspecting appliances, I've already made the conclusion that I want to, it puts the client at a slight disadvantage in that they can't actually validate the certificate, but I might choose that because it's a trade-off. I now, as a network administrator, I get insight into the traffic. When I deploy that particular appliance, I would like to make sure that my organization does not use the same certificate as another organization. And the real importance of that, and it's not necessarily that two different organizations are going to have traffic that are merging with each other and it's going to confuse things that way, but it is really from an attacker's perspective. If I know the root certificate that is being used for an SSL inspecting appliance, as an attacker, I now can construct an attack that uses that certificate. So if there's a particular vendor's product that I know all of them use the same certificate, I now know as an attacker, I can target every single installation of that particular software or that appliance, and the clients are not going to complain because I'm providing the same valid certificate that is installed on the client. So just with Superfish, when you install the Superfish application on a Windows system, it installs a root certificate authority certificate in the system. When an enterprise deploys SSL inspection, they do the same sort of thing. They install a certificate on the system. So if that certificate is not unique across installations, that allows an attacker to really target that particular software. You'll have to remind me of the other one that we had.
I was just going to go back in there to make sure.
Or if we have any other ones that come up.
So the other one was a use of a
the user application layer.
Yes. Yeah.
So the application layer is basically, if you have an SSL inspecting appliance or an application that is using the application layer, and when I say application layers, I don't want to get too much into the details of the OSI stack or anything like that, but basically, if I've got a web browser, the application layer is the web content that comes to my browser. So when I go to a web page, the application layer is the HTML content that provides me text and JavaScript and other things that I can see that my browser interprets. The problem with that is that without any sort of SSL inspection, when I visit a site, the SSL happens on a much lower layer in that it's not even interested, you've not even reached the point of sending or receiving HTML content. The SSL validation happens before any content is sent or received. The problem with using the application layer is it makes an assumption about the client. It assumes that the client is a human being or some really intelligent software that is sitting in front of a web browser. So if I open my web browser and this particular appliance is now injecting HTML content saying, hey, this certificate is not valid, I, as a human being, can read that and say, okay, this is something is fishy here. I'm not going to proceed. The problem is things that are making web requests that are not web browsers and they are not human beings sitting in front of web browsers. I might have an application that has an auto-update capability. And that auto-update capability, I'm not sitting in front of my computer running it. It just manually checks, maybe using a web protocol, is there an update available for this particular application? Now, if this SSL inspecting appliance is now injecting content saying that this certificate is not valid, but the actual communication is using valid certificate, you can get a wide range of unexpected results. So it's really The impact of that depends on the application, but the mistake there is the assumption that I'm dealing with human beings that are going to read the message, or they're going to see that red X on the screen and take some action based on that. So I just wanted to get into the very last, the two prior sections were focusing mostly on applications that are not doing SSL inspection or not validating SSL properly. I just briefly wanted to touch on the other operating mode of Tapioca, and that is inspection of all SSL traffic. So let's say I have one particular application that I'm looking at. I'm not doing things at scale. You know, I'm not looking at a million applications. If I'm looking at a million applications, like the Android applications, I just want to check, is it validating SSL or not? However, if there's a particular application that I'm interested in, I might want to see, is this application sending something over the network that I don't want it to or that it should not be sending? So if I have this application, what I can do is I can put Tapioca in line with its network traffic. Same sort of thing. Internet on one side, the application I want to test on the other. The main difference here is that in order to observe traffic, we're going to assume that the application is checking SSL validity. What I need to do is I install the Tapioca certificate. And I say Tapioca certificate, really, under the hood, it's MITM proxy, but there's a certificate on the Tapioca virtual machine. If I now install that certificate on the client system, assuming I have the ability to do that, my app says, well, everything looks fine. I think everything is good because I now have valid SSL traffic. So at this point where the client assumes that it has valid SSL traffic, I now can see everything with the Cert Tapioca appliance. So I get the ability to see what might be getting sent using web protocols. As long as there's not something called certificate pinning, which means the application is looking for a very specific certificate and not just a valid certificate in general. So just to tie it back in, I wanted to connect Tapioca with just the concept of trust. By using Tapioca, you can actually verify trust in applications that are communicating on the network. And that is the application using SSL properly? Is it validating certificates, or is it just sending HTTPS traffic without doing that validation? Or if there's an application that I want to specifically look at and determine, tell me everything that it's sending over the network, I can do that with the Tapioca appliance.
Okay, Will.
I think that brings us to the end.
Yeah, great. So if you have any questions for Will, feel free to log them in now. We've got about 3 minutes left, so we'll dive right into a question from Robert. And if you work for a credit card, you may want to hold your ears here. But Robert wants to know, should he be doing bill paying by snail mail and get rid of passwords for credit cards?
That's a very good question. And it's an interesting aspect. I work on the vulnerability analysis team at the CERT division. And a lot of us are kind of inherently paranoid people. Either inherently when you started work here or after you're exposed to the things that we're exposed to, you become a little bit more cautious about the things that you do. When it comes down to using smartphone applications, those applications are less in my experience, they're not as fully tested as web browsers on a standard client. So if I have a Windows system and I have an up-to-date, fully patched web browser, lots of people have looked at those web browsers and they've put a lot of effort into making sure that they are doing things securely. The problem about an application on a phone is if you don't have Cert Tapioca in line and you're monitoring the traffic, how do you know what it's doing? And that's the case with any application. Phones in particular, is you really don't have the same amount of information provided to you that you can make the security decision. So it's always, as with anything security, it's a trade-off. I'm not saying that nobody should do anything on the internet.
I was going to tell you our audience went down to zero because you scared everybody off. I'm just joking.
But yeah, it's a trade-off. Using smartphones or other less capable devices for security or financial transactions, it's a little bit of a riskier operation.
We got about a minute left, so we're going to get one more from Kim asking, why did you choose to look at Android applications?
Oh, that's a good question. Some folks might have looked at the research that we did and concluded, well, if Android has this many vulnerabilities and iPhone doesn't, then Android is more secure. And that's not necessarily the case. Really, this was the first application of Tapioca. And the Android platform being an open source platform, they have emulators available. They've got a lot of capabilities about it that allow you to get applications from the store and actually load them into a virtual environment. It was really the ease of testing that platform. We still have on our radar, I'll probably get to it even just starting this afternoon, but we've got other platforms such as iOS that we would like to replicate the same sort of test with.
Will, great presentation, great tips. Thank you very much. Everyone, that's going to lead us to our first break, so we'll be back at about 10:55 exactly, actually, for Jose Morales speaking on enhancing mobile device security, so you won't want to miss that. We'll be back in a few. Thank you.